Today's daf is daf tzadi tes, and we're up to the second line down from the top. Ubilvad shelo yotzi chutz. The Mishnah had established that a person could stand in one rishus, in rishus hayochid, and he could move something, an object, in rishus harabim, by stretching his hand into rishus harabim, on the condition that he doesn't take the chefetz more than dalan amas in rishus harabim. And this din of the Mishnah, that a person could stand in one rishus and carry in another rishus, refers to a situation where a person is on a gag, he's on the roof of his house, and it's more than 10 tefachim high in the rishus harabim. And in such a case, it's logical to assume that when he's metaltel, he lifts up the object above asar tefachim, which means that the object goes into the avir above rishus harabim, and that's called a makom p'tur. Above yud tefachim in rishus harabim is a makom p'tur. We've mentioned this on many occasions. So the Mishnah says, "Ubilvad shelo yotzi chutz me arba amos." And now the Gemara is going to analyze: can we possibly say that our Mishnah is teaching us that when a person takes it chutz the arba amos, and even if between the akira of the chayfetz and the hanoch of the chayfetz, the object goes through a mokum p'tur above 10 tefachim, is chayv chatos? Is ha hotzi chayv chatos? Shall we prove Rava's shita? The Omer Rava. This is a sugya in the first parak of Shabbos. Rava says, "Amavir chayfetz mitchilus arba l'sof arba veviru derech olav." If a person carries an object in rishus harabim for amos, and he lifts it up above 10 tefachim from the ground of rishus harabim, in such a case, even though between the akira and the hanocha, the Akira at the beginning of Dalet Amos and the Hanoch at the end of Dalet Amos, he took it through a Mokum Ptur above Yud Tefachim, nevertheless he's Chayav. And our Mishnah would seem to prove Rava. The Gemara answers no. There's no proof from our Mishnah. Mikatani doesn't say in our Mishnah, Mhotzi Chayav Chatos. It's true that the Mishnah certainly prohibits carrying it for Amos, and presumably even above 10 Tefachim. But nevertheless, the Mishnah doesn't commit itself that Yechayiv if you did such a thing. Dilma, perhaps the Mishnah means Imhotzi Potur. Avalasar, he violates an Isa Drabonon, but not a Chiyuv Chatos. Ika Diamri, a second Lishna has it. Ha Hotzi, from the fact that the Mishnah says, Ubilvad shelo yotzi chutzi arba amos, the implication is that if he would have been Motzi, if he stood on the roof of his house and he lifted up the object above 10 tefachim into the airspace of Rishus HaRabim and he carried it for Amos, he'd be Potter. And this is another case of Potter Avalasar, of an Issa D'Rabbanan, Lema Tevi Tiruvta D'Rava. Now, according to this interpretation of that Mishnah, the Mishnah contradicts Rava, because Rava said in this exact case, Yechayev. And the Gemara answers, no. It could very well be that the Mishnah implies that had he taken it from Dalet Amos, from the beginning of Dalet to the end of Dalet, above 10 Tefachim, he'd be Chayv Chatos. So basically, there's no conclusive evidence from our Mishnah neither to support Rava nor to reject Rava. Now we're up to Lo Ya'amod Adam. This is about, 12, 13 lines down from the top of the Amud. And the Gemara quotes our Mishnah. Lo Ya'amod Adam Rishus HaYochid V'yashtin Rishus HaRabim Rishus HaRabim V'yashtin Rishus HaYochid V'chein Lo Yirok. The Mishnah tells us that if a person is urinating from one rishus to the other, or he's spitting from one rishus to the other, that's a violation of Shabbos. And the Gemara wants to know what happens if he went ahead and he did such a thing, b'shogeg, does he bring a chatos? Amar Rav Yosef, hishtin v'rok, if he either urinated or he spit, and it went from one rishus to the other, chayv chatos. If he did a b'shogeg, he's chayv a chatos. So this is a violation of Melechus Hotzah D'Oraisa. So Gemara immediately asks, "Vahbi inon akira v'anochmi al gabi mokom arba." We have a principle that in order to be chayef otzah, you need number one an akira mimokom dalet al dalet. That means 4x4 tefachim. That's called the mokom chashuv. And the hanoch, you have to place it down in the other rishus, so 4 amos away in rishus harabim, in a mokom dalet al dalet. And here, he takes it from his mouth or from his the organ of his body, and he made an akira not from a mokom dalet al dalet. The leka, we don't have here an akira of the meiraglam or the roke from a place that's mokom dalet al dalet. So therefore, if he's ochre from his goof and his goof is not dalet al dalet, why should it be chayev? And he more answers a brand new principle, breakthrough principle. Machshavto mashve le mokom. That if he considers this an important place, he just didn't, it's not a case where he haphazardly put it down on a very small area that was less than dalet al dalet. He picked it up from a small area. No, this is where it is, and this was meant to be, and this is where he wants it to be. So that gives it the chashiva. Since he wants it, that's what it is. We even discussed a similar idea at the end of Masechet Shabbos, you may recall, with regard to shiurim, that sometimes a person needs a seed that's less than a gogeres, and yet he'll be chayef hotzah because he needs it. So this is a concept throughout Hilchus Hotzah called machshavto. His machshava makes it into a dover chashuv or shus chashuva. Dilo tema hachi. If you don't accept this breakthrough principle of machshavto mashvili mokom, how are you going to justify Rava's statement? The Omer Rava zorak v'noch b'piakel v'piakivshan. Chayev chatas, a man throws dalet amos or shusaravim and it lands in the mouth of a dog. He's trying to feed his dog. Or, alternatively, it lands in a kivshan, a furnace where it's going to be burnt up. But that's his intention. That's exactly what he wants to do. He's chayev chatas. Ayva b'inan hanoch al gabi mokom arba. You need a hanoch on a mokom choshuv. It's not possible that the kelev has a mouth that's 4x4 tefachim, or consider a kivshan, a hot furnace which is burning up things. You wouldn't call that a makom chashuv for anocha. But the answer is ela machshavto mashve le makom. You see from Rava in Zarek b'pi kelev o b'pi kivshan that he's maintaining this principle of machshavto mashve le makom. There's no absolute requirement, precondition of makom dalet al dalet. Makom dalet al dalet is just a means to an end to get chashivas. If you have chashivas because it's machshavto, that's enough. It's hokinami here too. Let's apply this to the case of mashtin varok. Machshavto mashve le makom. Notice he has to be okerit from his body. That's where it is, and that's where he wants to take it out of. And therefore, that's considered a machshava that makes it into a makom dalid al dalid, and therefore he is chayov. By Rav has the following suffix: Hu bershus hayochid upi ha'ama bershus harabim mahu. What happens if his feet are grounded in a rishus hayochid, but the member of his body, his organ, is already extended into rishus harabim, so that the urine comes from his body, but it doesn't leave his body until it leaves the pi ha'ama, which is already in rishus harabim? So are we saying that he's taking it from rishus hayochid into rishus harabim, which means that we go basar gufo, where he was oker the urine from his body, from his bladder? Or are we looking at the pi ha'ama, where the urine actually comes out of, and that's already located in Rishus HaRabim, so he's not taking it from Rishus HaYoch to Rishus HaRabim? And the Gemara analyzes the question, Mahu, basar akira azlinon, should we look at the place from which the meiraglayim, the urine, is coming, and it's being nekar from his guf, inside his urinary tract, where he's in a rishus hayochid, you know, basar yitzias lina? Or should we look at the place from which the urine is going out, and that's already in rishus harabim b'pi ha'ama? Teku, the Gemara doesn't come up with any final conclusion. La locha, since there's a suffix, the Rama paskins that in such a case it's potavol asur, he will not be chayev because the Gemara doesn't come to any definite conclusion. The Mishnah says, V'chein lo yarok, he's not allowed to spit while he's standing in Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid, or vice versa. And the Mishnah quotes the view of Rabbi Yossi, of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Mishen Nitlash, Nesaf Roko Bepiv, once his saliva is collected in his mouth, he's not allowed to walk four Amos from Shusarabim and then spit because he's carrying it. So the Gemara wants to know an analysis of the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. In what circumstances does roke in a person's mouth, is it considered as if it was gathered together, it's no longer part of his body, and therefore he's carrying it? So now, if Rabbi Yehuda says immediately shenitlash, in other words, as soon as he spits and the saliva goes out of his mouth, then since he's standing in one rishus, it's considered as if he's carrying the spit, afal gav delo hafich ba, even though lo hafach es harok bepiv lo okro mimkomo. In other words, the spit was already in his mouth. He didn't do any action to sort of to raise up the roke from his body. That's called lo hafich. I'll just read to you for a split second the English translation of the word hafich. Just give me a second here. He says here, first of all, his intent makes it a significant area, and that we saw in the case where he throws it into the mouth of a dog or the opening of a furnace. So that we have already. And now we had the suffix in the Gemara about Rava in the case of someone who urinates. And here we have the case of Lo Yorok, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda rules in our Mishnah that saliva is considered detached from the body as soon as it collects in one's mouth, even before it has been swirled around in his mouth in preparation for expectoration. So again, he's saying that there's one stage which is called saliva that is collected in one's mouth, and then there's a more advanced stage, a more developed stage, when it's actually being prepared to be spit out of his mouth, and that's called hafich. So the Gemara thinks that if we read Rabbi Yehuda carefully in our Mishnah, it seems that once the saliva is collected in his mouth, even though he really hasn't done anything in a sort of an active way to gather it together, what was the language again, to swirl it around in his mouth, he's still chayav. Vatnan, don't we have a contradiction to this statement of Rabbi Yehuda from a Mishnah Masech Kalim with regard to the saliva in one's mouth? Does it have what's called a Toras Mashke? And that means that there's a halacha precondition in Kabbalah's Tumah that a foodstuff has to first come in contact with one of the seven Mashkim, and then it becomes Mukhshor LeKabbal Tumah. And the Mishnah establishes that Hoya Ochel Tvela, he's eating a dried fig and it's Truma, Biyadayim Miso Avos, and his hands are considered Shnios Lituma, and he hasn't washed his hands. And the Chachamim, by imposing the status of Shnios Lituma, means that his hands, when they come in contact with the Truma, are Metami the Truma. And he's eating this Te'ena Yevesha, which is Truma, with Yadayim Miso Avos, that are Shnios Lituma. And that would certainly be Metame the Truma. And there are three dargos in Tuma. There's Aviavos HaTuma, like Tuma's mess. And number two, there's an Av HaTuma. And then there's something called a Vlad HaTuma. An Av HaMetuma is a Tuma Chamura. It's Metame Odom V'Kelim, Ochlin U'Mashkin. And that creates a Rishon LeTuma. A Vlada Tuma is relatively called a Tuma Kala. It's not as chomer, of course, as an Avatuma. It's not Metame Onim V'Kelim. It's only Metame Ochlin U'Mashkin. Now, what we call a Darga Shnia, which is an Avatuma, is a second, it's not an Aviavos HaTuma, but it can generate a next level of a Tolda of a Vlada Tuma, which is called Vlados HaTuma. So an Avatuma that has contact with Onim V'Kelim, Ochlin U'Mashkin, makes it into Rishon L'Tuma. And now, this machal on Mishka, which is a Rishon L'Tuma that comes in contact with other food stuff, makes it into a Sheni L'Tuma. The Sheni comes in contact with other food, which becomes a Shlishi L'Tuma. And he who comes in contact and touches a Shlishi L'Tuma becomes a Revi L'Tuma. Now, if you have Chulin, Chulin is only Mekabel Tuma at the level of a Rishon or a Sheni. But it never could become what's called a Shlishi L'Tum. But Truma, if Truma comes in contact with a Sheni, becomes a Shlishi. If something comes in contact with the Shlishi, it doesn't become a Revi. And all this is explained in the Mishnayos in the second parak of Taros. Now, Chachomim instituted a Tuma on Stam Yadayim, giving the Yadayim, without Netilas Yadayim, the status of Shnius L'Tuma, and therefore they will disqualify Ochlin U'Mashkin of Truma by making it into a Shlishi. The Yadayim is a Sheni L'Tuma, and if it comes in contact with Truma, it makes it into a Shlishi L'Tuma. Okay, that's based on a principle called Yadayim Askoniosen. In any event, what we're really interested in is the next part of the Mishnah in Kelim. It says, Hichnis Yado Letoch Piv. What we need is that the Dvela, this dried fig, should be Mukhshal Lekabel Tumah. So now he puts his hand into his mouth. And keep in mind, his hand is a Sheni Letumah. And Kidei Litzrol Tzrar. So he has something in his mouth, like a small stone that he wants to get out of his mouth. We would say he's got a piece of meat stuck between his teeth. Now, after he takes his hand out of his mouth, he comes in contact with this Dveil of Truma. Rabbi Meir Mitame. Rabbi Meir says that the roke, the spit that's collected in his mouth, when he chews something, that itself is called a mashke, and therefore it's machshir sadvela kabel tumen. Therefore, when he comes in contact with the dvela by touching it with his hands and a shniyos l'tuma, he now passes the truma b'tor shlishi l'tuma. Rabbi Yossi says, no, the roke, the spit is in his mouth. He put his hand in his mouth, but the spit in his mouth is part of his guf. It's not a separate entity. It's not a machshir. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says it all depends. If it was hipech ba, tame, lo hipech ba, tahar. At what stage did the spit collect in his mouth? If it's at an advanced stage, which we call hipech ba, he swirled it around his mouth, as we said, and he took it from one side of his mouth and put it in another mouth because he's trying to spit it out, that makes it into a mashkin. It's mashkin the dveil lekabel tumah. However, if he puts his hand in his mouth, his fingers in his mouth, and lo hipech ba, but he hasn't yet swirled around the spit in his mouth, the saliva, in order to get ready to spit it out, is tar. Then it's not yet considered a mashke. It's not machshe the dveil lekabel tumah. So we see clearly that according to Rabbi Yehuda, when is roke considered as if it was nekar mimkoma, it was already removed from its place, and it's no longer part of his guf, that's only after Hepech Ba. Our Mishnah records Rabbi Yehuda saying that the roke is not considered part of his guf already from the time that the roke is in his mouth. So the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yochanan, Mukhlefes Hashita. Rashi interprets this to mean that Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind. And in our Mishnah, he assumed that you don't even need Hepech Ba. But now we see that Rabbi Yehuda rescinded that position, that opinion, and therefore he now holds that only when it's hibach ba, then it becomes nekar min aguf, and therefore if he's carrying it for amos and shesarabim, he would only be chayev after hibach ba. Reish Lakish amar liolam lo tachlif. Reish Lakish is going to make a valiant effort, unfortunately not successful, but to try to reconcile the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. Hacha mayaskinon. What we're talking about in our Mishnah is not saliva, but kicho. Kicho, I think, is called phlegm in English. Let's see if he corroborates. Phlegm. How do you like that? Okay. Now, phlegm, kicho, this is not the most aesthetic topic to talk about, but anyway, that's already considered nekar min aguf. In other words, when he coughs up this phlegm, he's taking it from his goof and he's coughing it up. And it doesn't matter whether or not he swirls it around in his mouth, he is coughing it in order to expel it. And that's when Rabbi Yehuda says that it's already at that stage where it's nekar min aguf, and therefore he's carrying it, and if he spits it out four amas later in Rishus Rabbim, he's going to be chayev. And therefore, there's no contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda and our Mishnah, says Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Yehuda is quoted in the Mishnah in Kalim, where Rabbi Yehuda says it's only considered nekar miguf if it's hipechpa, because Rabbi Yehuda in Masechta Kalim is referring to a case of rok, of saliva, whereas Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is referring to case of Keicho. Vasanya, the Gemara says, but what are you going to do with the Braisa? The Braisa quotes Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda omer Keicho v'nitlash. Now, what does that mean, v'nitlash? And Rabbi Yehuda goes on to say in this Braisa that you're not allowed to carry it for Amasim Shesarabim. My love, shouldn't we assume that's Rok v'nitlash, that the word nitlash really is more appropriate for the word Rok, because nitlash means, you know, he's spitting it out of his mouth. So he has, you know, keicho or roko that he finds, you know, collected in his mouth. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying in this braisa that even in the case of rok, he should not be carrying it for amos and rishus harav. What says lo? How do you read this braisa? It's kicho v'nitlash. Don't read it as rok v'nitlash, but read it as kecho v'nitlash. Which, I don't think the Gemara is now changing the text of the Braisa, but the Gemara is changing our interpretation of the Braisa. It's not referring to rok, but rather to kicho. And kicho, even though it's only nitlash, he's not allowed to carry it for amos, even without a hepuch ba, because in the case of kicho, he expels it from within his body with a cough, and therefore it was nekar min aguf. The Gemara says, but what are you going to do with the following brice? Of Atanya, we have a brice that says, Rabbi Yehuda omer kicho shenitlash, v'chein roko shenitlash, lo yelech arba'amos ad sheyoruk. Here it's explicit that there's kicho and there's roko. So even in the case of rok, Rabbi Yehuda is committed to the position that although it was not a case of hipech ba, he still is going to be chayev because it's roko shenitlash and he can't carry it for amos v'shesarabim. So it's already considered nekar migufo when it collects in his mouth. We have no choice but to accept the reconciliation of Rabbi Yochanan before Reish Lakish, and that means that Rabbi Yehuda rescinded his original position as he formulated in our Mishnah, and his final conclusion is presented in the Mishnah in Kalim. Amar Reish Lakish, this is a little bit of an agadita. Kiach bifnei rabo, if he coughs up his phlegm and spits it out in front of his Rebbe, chayv misa. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch will take care of him. He's not behaving properly in the vis-a-vis his Rebbe. Shenemar, the Torah says, in a pasuk in Mishlei, it says, "Kol misanai avu moves." The Torah itself is speaking, saying, "Anyone who hates me is someone who loves death." Al tikri misanei elamasniai. The pasuk is not talking about those who hate Torah, but rather those who make Torah disgusting on others. And what's being said over here by the Torah itself is that those are masnianosi. How do they make Torah disgusting and repulsive? They do dvar ma'usim. They act in a very repulsive kind of way. A way that's lacking in intelligence and sensitivity. Those love death, meaning they are going to be destroyed. And the Gemara is now applying this case of masniyeh to the case of a Talmud who has kicho, kiach, and he spits it out in front of his Rebbe. Rashi says he should have gotten rid of it in his clothing if necessary, but not to spit it out in front of his Rebbe. V'amenis anis, the Gemara asks, well, why should he be chayv misa? I mean, a person has to cough, he's got phlegm, he may have saliva in his mouth. Then it comes really against his will. It's almost like an involuntary response of his body, either because he's very cold or maybe he's not well. So the Gemara answers, kiach v'rok kamrinon. When a person coughs and he has phlegm and then he spits it out, that's the v'rok. On that, he's not an onus. As we said before, he could have somehow put it into his clothing, or he could have, moved at a distance and spit it out elsewhere. If he does it directly in front of his Rebbe, that's already misani'i, as we said before. Now we're up to the Mishnah here at the bottom of Daf Tzadites Amin Aleph. Now the Mishnah is going to address the issue of a person who on Shabbos is standing in one Rishus and he stretches his neck out into another Rishus in order to drink water. Lo yamar adam b'shus ha'yochid v'yishte b'shus ha'rab. A person under normal circumstances, we'll see the exception in a moment, is not allowed to stand in one rishus and stretch his neck out and drink water or whatever it is in another rishus. Now we're talking about a person who is holding on to a receptacle. And the Rabbanan are afraid that once he stretches his neck out into another rishus with his vessel, with his utensil in his hand, he may inadvertently take that utensil and bring it back to the place where he started with, in which case he's chayav achatas. And the same is true in the other direction, b'shus rabbi v'yishter b'shus ha'yochid. Elim Cain, there's one exceptional scenario in which we allow him to do this. Hichnis rosho v'rubo l'mokum shushose. If he bends down, not just by stretching his neck out, but most of his body is on an incline inside the other rishus. Here, the Rabbanu were not afraid that maybe he would take the kli, the utensil, and bring it back into where he's standing. Why? Because he knows that this condition is being set, and the only way he's allowed to drink is by pushing his whole body almost, except for his feet, into the second rishus. He's doing this acrobatic act. That's going to be a hecker for him. That's going to remind him that it's Shabbos. He won't forget it's Shabbos. And then the Mishnah ends with two very ambiguous words, v'chein begat. And the same Isa Shasiya, which prohibits you from drinking, applies to Yayin Shebegat. And the gat is where they used to crush the grapes in order to make wine. I think it's called a press in English. Let's see how he translates the word gas. A wine press. Not bad. I'm 2 for 2 today. They're going to hire me for art school. Okay, so we're going to have to see what this v'chein begas is around, because the Mishnah seems to be saying that as far as drinking in the wine press, as we said, wine from a wine press, that if a person is standing outside the gat, outside the press, he stretches his neck inside the press in order to drink from the wine, then we're going to require of him that he move most of his body into the area of the wine press. Rosho v'rubo bagas. Now, in introduction to our Gemara here on the Mishnah, the Mishnah had said that you're not allowed to stand in one rishus and drink in another rishus. We're afraid that he'll take the kli, the vessel, and bring it back into the Shus where he is. Now, if you recall, back on Daf Tzadiches in the Mishnah allowed you to stand in one Rishus and carry an object in another Rishus. Let's say he's standing in Rishus HaYochid, he's carrying it and relocating in Rishus HaRabin. And the Gemara had explained that that reflects the Shita of the Rabbanon, who are not afraid, they don't have a gzera that maybe he's going to take the object and bring it back to where he was and where he's standing. And Rabbi Meir, later on at Daf Kuf Aleph, at the end of this Masechta, is going to disagree. He's going to say that a person is not allowed to stand in one Rishus and take a key, a mafteach, that's in another Rishus in order to open the door in that other Rishus. We're afraid that he might take that mafteach and he'll bring it towards where he's standing in the other Rishus. So since our Mishnah says a person should not stand in Rishus HaYochid and drink in Rishus HaRabim, we're afraid he'll take the kli in, that seems to reflect the shita of Rabbi Meir, that we have Gzeres Shamiyachnis Eilav Esakli. So the Gemara asks Reisha, the previous Mishnah, we interpreted it to be Rabbanan, who allow you to stand in one Rishus and move an object in another Rishus, in Rishus HaRabim. And safer, but now our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara finds that a little bit uncomfortable, that the Reisha should be one Tana and the Seif another. Amar Rav Yosef, Bechafetzin Shetzrichim Lo V'Divrei HaKol. In other words, what we're talking about is objects that he needs, meaning he has to drink from this receptacle. Even the Chachamim would concede that a person is not allowed to stand in one Rishus and be metaltel in another Rishus, if we have reason to believe that he might take it back into his Rishus, and he won't be careful about. In our Mishnah, when we're talking about someone who's drinking, he needs to drink the Mashke, and he's standing in another Rishus. Even the Chachamim would admit that in this particular scenario, we have to institute a gzera that he might be Machnis Elov. So therefore, our Mishnah could also reflect the Shita of the Rabbanah, the Chachamim, so there's no steer between the Reish and the Seifa, and we can reconcile the two. Iboilahu. The Gemara has a suffix. In this case of a person who's standing in one Rishus and he wants to drink in another Rishus, what if one of those two Rishuyos is only Rishus to Rabbanan and a Carmelist? Carmelist Mai. Now, let's keep in mind that in the worst case scenario, if he forgets himself and he brings the Keli back, he's carrying from a Carmelist into Rishus HaYochid, or perhaps from a Rishus HaRab into a Carmelist. The whole Isser here is only Drabbanon. And we're not telling you up front that he's violating the Isser Drabbanon. You're only afraid that he might violate an Isser Drabbanon when he takes the, if he forgets himself and takes the receptacle back to where he's standing. Om Rabbi, Rabbi's not bothered by that. The Mishnah is saying exactly that, that with regard to Rishus HaRab, Rishus HaYochid, where you're not allowed to stand in one Rishus and drink in another Rishus, the same din applies in a Carmelis. Amar Rava, Rava says, I object. He gufa gzera v'anan nekum v'nigzar gzera l'gzera. The whole isur of drinking from another Rishus is itself a gzera, because you're afraid that he might take the receptacle and bring it back to where he's standing. And Carmelis, which is on a Daraisa level of Mokum Ptur, the Rabbanan considered a Rishus HaRabim, that also is a Gzera. So you're piling on one Gzera on top of another Gzera. Omar Abaye, Minah Aminale, from whence did I derive the conclusion that with regard to a Carmelis, we make a Gzera lest a person, if he's allowed to do X, he might come and carry from a Carmelis into Rishus HaRabim or Rishus HaYochid. Midak Tani, from the fact that we learned in our Mishnah, here we're going to turn to Daf Tzadites Amid Beis, V'chein Begas. You may recall that the Mishnah concluded with two ambiguous words. And Gas, which is a wine press, is a Carmelis. What does that mean? It is three Tfachim above the ground. The Mechitzos of this Gas are three Tfachim, but they're less than 10 Tfachim high. And it's located, this gas, this wine press, in a Rishus HaRabim. And the Mishnah tells me that a person should not be standing in a Rishus HaYochid and drinking from Shesaravim are the opposite. And you might ask, well, we already derived that from the beginning of the Mishnah. But rather, we must assume that the Gat, if it's not a repetition of what it already says in the Reish of the Mishnah, must be talking about a Karmelis. And the Mishnah is being Mechadish, an unbelievable Chiddush, that this din, that a person should not be standing in a Reish Sarabim, and he shouldn't be stretching his neck out into a wine press, which has the status of a Karmelis, because if he drinks wine from the wine press when he's standing in Reish Sarabim, he's carrying an effect from a Karmelis to a Reish Sarabim, or from Reish Sarabim to a Karmelis. So we see that even in the case of Karmelis, Rabbanan instituted this Gzerah, and it's not considered Gzerah L'Gzerah, which apparently means that according to Abaye, when they establish Karmelis, they establish it as a Reish Sarabim, or as a Reish Sarabim, or both. It's not considered Gzerah, even though initially the reason why Rabbanan enacted this principle in this category called the Karmelis with all its special dinim and isurim is because of reasons X, Y, and Z. Because he might confuse the Rishus HaRabim, etc., etc. But nevertheless, forget about the reason. It now becomes an isur b'toras atzma. And therefore, any situation which might lead to a violation of Karmelis is considered like a single Gzerah. Rav, on the other hand, said, no, you're misunderstanding v'chein bagas. That's not what the Mishnah is talking about. Rava Omar le'inyan maser. The halacha is that you're allowed to drink, even without being mafish maser, what's called the shtias aroi, on a temporary basis. V'chein Omar Rav Shishas, v'chein begas le'inyan maser. And the Gemara is now going to clarify what this din of gas, the status of a wine press, is with regard to maser. This nan, we have a Mishnah in the fourth parak of Masros, and we're talking about a shtias aroy and a shtias keva. A shtias keva generates a chi of maser, but not a shtias aroy. Is the Mishnah says that shosim alagas, a person is allowed to stand inside the wine press and drink from the wine, even before the wine, after it's pressed, it's stage one of pressing it, has gone down to the bar. Bar means there's an opening in the ground where all the wine is collected. And he wants to drink from the wine before the wine goes down and falls into the bar. And he's allowed to do so, even though there was no hafrashas trumas of maisris. Because again, in this stage, since the wine hasn't gotten down into the bar, it's before what's called gemar malachto, is bein bechamin ubein bitzonein upot divrei Rabbi Meir. He's allowed to pour wine from the wine press, whether it is into a cup of hot water. Remember that the wine itself is very concentrated. You have to dilute it in water. And it matters not, says Rabbi Meir, whether the water is warm or cold or room temperature. In both cases, he's potter min ha'maaser, because if he hasn't taken the wine out of the gas, out of the wine press, then it's not called a shtias keva. It's only a shtias aroy, and he's allowed that without being mafrish trumas of maasers. Rabbi Eliezer bar Tzadok Omer, he mechayev. He says that yechayev b'maaser as soon as you mix the wine with water. And it matters not whether you mix it with warm water or cold water. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the meziga itself, the very fact that he dilutes it in water, that makes the shtia into shtias keva. And therefore, the fact that he's standing in the gas, which normally would make it into a shtias aroy, and therefore he'd be allowed to drink from the wine while he's in the wine press without hafrashas trumas of maisros, but that's not going to apply if he already took this natural wine and diluted it with either warm water or with room temperature water. Chachamim omrim, the chacham come with a compromise shita. We have Rabbi Meir on one extreme. He says you're potter even in the case of chamin. We have Rabbi Eliezer, who says you're chayev even in the case of tzonen, because you did the meziga and you diluted it. And the chacham say al chamin chayev. If he dilutes the wine, the pure concentrated wine, with warm water, at that point, he has made it impossible, or shall we say irreversible, he's going to drink the wine. There's no other possibility, because if he pours the wine back into the gas, since there's warm water, that's mekalkel es hayayin. So we know now that it's final. It's actually irrevocable. He's going to have to drink the wine, and that's what his intention is, the moment he warms up the wine with warm water. Alatzonen, if on the other hand he adds cold water, potter, the neshamachzir samosar, because he can return whatever he doesn't drink back into the gas, and therefore what he's drinking is only a shtiyas saroy. In other words, if you're in a situation where you're drinking something, and you're intending that the leftovers will go back into its original place, that's called a shtiyas saroy. So now we can understand our mission of Achein Begas, which is a comment that has nothing to do with Melechah Shabbos. It's purely an addition for the laws of Maaseh. And Rava says that this din of Achein Begas is a reference to Maaseh. As far as Shabbos is concerned, you're not allowed to stand in one Rishus and drink in another Rishus, unless he pushes Rosho Verubo into the place where he's drinking. Because if he's only going to stretch his neck out, then we're always afraid that he's going to take the kli that he's using to drink from, and he's going to bring it back to the Rishus where he's standing. And even in the case of Gas, means that as far as Maser is concerned, a person should not be standing on the ground outside the Gas and stretching his neck in into the wine press in order to drink without being mafreshit, unless he pushes or stretches Rosho Verubo into the gas. If he's only stretching his neck out into the gas, then we're afraid that he's going to take the wine out of the gas and he's going to drink the wine. Once he takes the wine out of the gas, then he's already involved in what's called the shtiyas keva, and he's chayven maaser. Now he's drinking tevel. That's terrible. So since the Mishnah did not make any distinction about how he was diluting the wine, it would seem to imply that if he was machnis rosho verubo, then he would be allowed to drink from the gas when he's standing outside the gas, but rosho verubo is inside the gas. And it makes no difference whether it's chamin or tzonen, how he dilutes the wine. And this reflects the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Now, our mission is going to talk about flat roofs. And the question is, when you have a flat roof, how do you get the water, the rainwater, to flow from the roof at a distance? Meaning, if things are left alone, the rainwater is going to fall right down the ledge, the outer ledge of the roof, and it's going to destroy it. It's going to damage your kosel. You know, you don't want the wetness of the rainwater to affect your kosel. So what they did was, they set up one of two systems, both of which are going to be addressed by our Mishnah. One system is called in modern Hebrew the Marzev. And the Marzev is also called the Mazchila. That's another name for the same thing. And basically what it is on the outside of the wall of the house, you set up a gutter, and the rainwater, if there's a little bit of an incline, will flow into this gutter, into this mazchila, and there are holes at the bottom of the mazchila, and that's where the water is going to go out into the Rishus HaRab. Now, the mazchila is, generally speaking, close to the edge of the gag, and it's at a distance that's less than 3 tefachim, and therefore the mazchila has the status of something that's mechuba, that's connected to the gag, and it's considered, like the gag, a rishus hayochid. It's an extension of the gag. Now, here's an important point. If he's standing in rishus harabim, and he wants to collect the water from this mazchila, then he's in deep trouble, because when he takes the water from the mazchila, and we just said the mazchila, since it's proximate to the gag, less than 3 tefachim, it's called mechuber lagag, making the maskil onto Rishus HaYochid, if he's standing Rishus HaRabim, and he grabs onto the water, he digs out the water, scoops out the water into a receptacle, then he's taking the water from Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaRabim. So that's a real problem. However, he has another option. He could wait until the water is already flowing down. It's now in midair. And then he could put his receptacle, his pail, to catch the water as it's flowing down. And that's what the Mishnah permits. Why? Kolet Adam min hamazchela. If the rainwater is flowing down through this, we'll call it a gutter, and now it's in the air, so he's basically taking it from the air of Rishus HaRabim. It's lamata me'asar tvachim. Any airspace below asar tvachim is part of the Rishus HaRabim. He's standing in Rishus HaRabim. He's taking the water from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, it's mutter. But if on the other hand, he would want to climb up to the gutter and scoop the water, or put his mouth there and drink the water directly from the gutter, then he's in effect taking the water, drawing it from Rishus HaYochid, and he's standing in Rishus HaRabim, he violates Melechus Otzah. Now we mentioned there's a different system, an alternative way of getting the water from the roof, the rainwater, out into Rishus HaRabim, and that's called Minat Sinor. And a Sinor is a vertical pipe that is almost attached to the wall of his house. And in this case, when they used the Tsinar system, it was a distance of 3 tfachim from the gag. And therefore, mikomakom shose, as if to say that he can drink from this Tsinar. He doesn't have to be concerned about the possibility that the Tsinar has the status of Rishus HaYochid, because the Tsinar, as we said before, is distant from the Gag by 3 Tfachim. Is therefore, let's say, for example, the Tsinar is within 10 Tfachim of the Karka Rishus HaRabim. Then even if he drinks directly from the Tsinar, or puts his receptacle there, he is in effect taking it from Rishus HaRabim out to Rishus HaRabim. Because since the Tsinar is meruchak, it's far away from the Gag by Shlosha Tfachim, therefore the Tsinar itself, it's not 4 Tfachim wide, so therefore the opening of the Tsinar is called a Makom Ptur, and you're allowed to carry from Makom Ptur into Rishus HaRabim. But if on the other hand, the opening of the Tsinar is above Asar Tfachim from the ground of Rishus HaRabim, and therefore it's no longer the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, then how much more so? For sure, you're allowed to take the water and collect it, because you're collecting it from the Avir, which is above 10 Tfachim, which is a Makom Ptur. However, you would not be allowed to drink directly from this Tsinar into your mouth or with a receptacle. And the reason for that is because the Chachamim were afraid that perhaps this Tsinar might be 4 Tfachim wide. And if you know it's not 4 Tfachim wide, you may confuse it next time and assume the head to the leniency applies even in the case of a Tsinar that is 4 Tfachim wide. If the Tsinar is 4 Tfachim wide and it's got the Yud, the Gova of Yud Tfachim, then it's a Rishus HaYochid. And if he takes water out, draws water out, and he's standing Rishus HaRabim, he's going to be in violation of Melechus Otzah. So the Gemara now wants to analyze this halacha of collecting the water from the airspace when it flows through the mazchela. Kolet in, al mitzari flow. He's only allowed to collect the water as it flows through the air of Rishus HaRabim, but not litzarif. Litzarif means to join his mouth close, or the kli, close to the mazchila. My time on Rav Nachman, hocha b'mazchila, pochos mishloshes somach legagas kinon, because this gutter is very, very close to the gag, and therefore it's within 3 tefachim, we apply the principle of lavud, and that creates a chibur between the mazchila and the gag, and kol pochos mishloshes somach legag, ki gag tomi, and now it has the same status as a Rishus HaYochid, as the Gag itself. Tanya Nami Hachi, and we're going to support this from a Bryce. So the Bryce is talking about two houses. One is higher than the other. And the height of the higher roof vis-a-vis the lower roof is 10 tfachim. Now, there was no Erev Chatzeros that would allow carrying from one gag to the other. But nevertheless, the Braisa says, Omed Adam B'Shus HaYochid, a person is allowed to stand on his roof, which is the smaller, the lower roof. And Magbia Yodu L'mala Me'asar Tfachim, he raises his hands up, let's say he's holding a receptacle, above 10 Tfachim, L'Pachos Mishlosha Somach L'Gag, and the distance between where he's collecting the water and the Gag itself is less than Shlosha Tfachim. V'Kolet, he's allowed to now place his receptacle in, holding it in his own Rishus HaYochid, to receive the water that's flowing and is now in the airspace. Ubilvad, but what he's not allowed to do is Shalo Yitzarif. He would not be allowed to stretch his arm out all the way to the Gag and to collect the water from his friend's Gag. And this again is a proof of Nachman, that in a case of Tzinor, if it would be Samach LeGag, less than 3 Tvachim, it would have the same din as a Gag. And if he'd be with Tzarif and be Kolad, he'd be Chayev. Tanya Idoch, and we have another Bryce that says the exact same thing, but just in a slightly different wording. Lo Yamod Odom B'Rishus HaYochid V'Yagbia Yodo L'malo Me'asor Tvachim L'Fachos Mishlosh Samach LeGag V'Yitzarif Aval Kolad Uvishos. Now the Gemara wants to know about this possibility in the case of a tzinor that you can drink even directly from the tzinor in a tzinor, but mikol makom shoseh. In other words, whether or not he's collecting it from the air as it flows down, or whether or not he takes his kli and attaches it directly to this pipe. Tano, we learned in a braisa, yesh bat tzinor arba also. If the tzinor itself is a very wide kind of a pipe and it has the dimensions of 4 tfachim by 4 tfachim, then you would not be allowed to take your kli and be mitzarif it, because the tzinor, now, since it is arbal arba, has the status of Rishus HaYochid, and he's standing in a Rishus HaRab. So if he takes the water out of the tzinor, which is arbal arba, and he's standing in Rishus HaRab, he's got a real problem of hachnosa. And it matters not even if this tzinor has reached the level where it's within 10 tfachim, but it doesn't matter. The tzinor inside is a Rishus HaYochid. So if he's taking the water from the tzinor, that's called mitzarev, then he's taking it from, he has an akira from Rishus HaYochid, and the hanocha is in the Rishus HaRab that he's standing in. Mipneshu kemotzi mirshus l'rishus. And this leads us to the second Mishnah, of three Mishnais on this Amud. And this is the case of drawing water from a well. We've had a number of occasions to discuss this. The well, in this particular scenario in the Mishnah, is located in Rishus HaRavim. And he wants to take water out of this bar and bring it into a bias. And the Mishnah says, Bar Rishus HaRavim v'chul yoso gavo asorat fachim. You may recall the word chulio, which means that when you dig the bar to make the cistern underground, the afar now becomes like a mound around the edge of the bar, all the way around. And if this chulio is gavah asar tfachim, it's 10 tfachim high from the karka, then it has the status of a tail, what we call a tail brishus harabim. And let's just get a second case and we'll see how the Mishnah paskins. The second scenario is chalon sha'al gabav. So he has a house and it's next to a cistern of water. He wants to take his pail and enter it or exit it through this chalon, through this window, in order to draw water from the bar. And the other scenario that I referred to was ashpa b'rshus harabim, gavoh asor tfachim. You have a rubbish pile that is 4 tfachim by 4 tfachim in width and 10 tfachim in height. And that gives the ashpa the status of rishus hayochid. Is therefore chalon shal gabav shofchin l'socha mayim b'shabes. He's allowed to take out his wastewater from his window and chuck it, so to speak, throw it onto this ashpa, this very sizable garbage dump, if you can call it that. Mayim b'shabes. And what that means is that the ashpa, since it's 10 tefachim high, it has the status of shayachit. And therefore, when he's throwing it out of his window, this wastewater, it's going from shayachit into the ashpa, which is itself shayachit. The only thing is that it's going on the airspace of shayachit, but it's above 10 tefachim, and therefore it's a makom p'tur. And the Gemara is going to analyze what's the din if you carry from shayachit to shayachit through a makom p'tur. So in both cases of a chulia, which has the height of 10 tefachim, as well as in the case of the ashpa, which is 10 tefachim high, we have rishus hayachid, and therefore he's allowed to, in the case of the chulia sabar, to draw the water from a rishus hayachid into rishus hayachid. The Gemara says, "V'may askinon." What exactly is this case of a barber sarab where the chulia is 10 tefachim high and he's got a window, and through this window he's going to put his pail out and draw water from the cistern? If the bar and the chulia are both right next to the house, if that be the case, lomali chulia asara, why do you tell me that the chulia has to be asara tefachim high? Who needs that? Even if the chulia sabar would not be 10 tefachim high, nevertheless the bar itself is rishus hayochid. Why? Because the bar itself is 10 tefachim deep, and that gives it mechitzos of 10 tefachim. So now, when he takes from the bar, he's taking from rishus hayochid into rishus hayochid. Because the bar itself, insofar as it's 10 tefachim deep, and for sure, his house, where he's drawing the water into, both are a rishus hayochid. So he's basically carrying something from rishus hayochid into rishus hayochid. And if the distance between the bar and his house is less than arba tefachim, then he has a makom p'tur. So in other words, if the bar and his window are very close to each other, then the airspace between them is called a makom p'tur. And it's above 10 tefachim. Amar Rav Huna, hachamay askinon, b'mufleges min hakosel arba. So how do you, in other words, let's just go over one more time the Gemara's kasha, since the bar and the chulia smuchim labayis, so then, why does the Mishnah require as a stipulation that it be a chuyav asara? Forget about the chuyav asara. We don't need that. Let's say it's not gavo asara. The bar still has the status of rishus hayochid because it's 10 tefachim deep, let's assume. So he's taking from rishus hayochid to rishus hayochid. Why do you need that the chulia itself, the mound above that surrounds the sfas habor, should be 10 tefachim high? Omer afunach mayaskinu mufleges min hakosel arba. The bar with its chulia are at a distance of 4 tefachim from the bayis, and therefore they don't have the status of a rishus hayochid. V'taymedika chulia sora. But what generates the heter to be dole mayim from this bar, to take it into the house, it has to be because the chulya, the top, the tail that goes around the house, around the bar, excuse me, is 10 tefachim higher than the karka. And above 10 tefachim, it has the status of a makom p'tur. So the dli, together with the pail, together with the water, when it goes out of the bar, and the bar, as we said before, is a reshus hayochid, and it goes through the space between the bar and the bayis, when he carries the pail into his house. And now the distance is 4 tefachim. But since the dli is going above 10 tefachim, that's going through the airspace of a makom p'tur, so he's allowed to take it from Sayyachid to Sayyachid derech makom p'tur. So the implication is holeka chulya sara. But if this chulya is not 10 tefachim high, is then you're not allowed to carry or draw the water from the bar on Shabbos. Because since we're talking about a case of Mufleges Menakosel Arba, so the airspace into which he's taking this dli that separates the bar from the window of his house is a Mokom Ptur. And therefore, Holeka Chulya Sara, then you would not be allowed to do this because you cannot take from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid Derech Rishus HaRabim in a case where it's below 10 tefachim from the karka. So this airspace that's below 10 tefachim from the karka is the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. He's taking it from the bar, which is Rishus HaYochid because it's 10 tefachim deep, into his house, but he's carrying it through the Rishus HaRabim. Derech Rishus HaRabim. Why? Because the Chulya has less than a height of 10 tefachim. So he's going to put the Dli right there, let's say 5 tefachim above the ground. He's carrying it now through Rishus HaRavim. He's not allowed to do that. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, he has a different way of explaining the Mishnah. And even if I assume that the bar is samuch, afilu tema smucha, the bar is very close, it's less than 4 tefachim from his window. But hakamashmon, the bar v'chul yosem, it's tarfin lasara. Now Mishnah wants to tell us that if the depth of the bar is 5 tefachim, and the chulya on top of the bar is 5 tefachim, we can integrate those two 5 tefachim, the subterranean and the on-the-ground 5 tefachim. And that means that bar v'chulyosim, it's tarfim liasor. Now we had a second case where he throws his wastewater out of his window onto the ashpa. Ashpa, b'rishus harabim, the Mishnah tells us, if it's 10 tefachim high and you're pouring water out of your window, you're allowed to do it and the waste will land in the rubbish and the rubbish itself is now a Rishus HaYochid. Is lo chai shinon, I don't understand, ask the Gemara of a lo chai shinon, shemati notel, ashpa. Don't we have to worry that in a public dumping ground, from time to time, the municipality comes to clear away the ashpa, you know, because otherwise it'll be a horrific situation. He's going to continue to take water from his house and pour it directly into this ashpa. And now the ashpa is a caramelist. Well, it might even be a Rishus HaRavim. If, let's say, they take out the entire rubbish and it's, you know, and now it's very low, it's less than 3 tefachim, it would be a Rishus HaRab. If it's 3 tefachim high, it's a caramelist. V'omar Ravin bar Ada, Omar Rebbe. Gemara has a whole story now about Rebbe, and based on this story, we're going to conclude that a person that the Chachamim were very afraid of an ashpa. It's a very insecure situation. We can't rely on an ashpa. People come, or the municipality comes to clear away the ashpa. And he quotes Rabbi Yitzchak Maisa b'Mavui Echad. There was a case of a Mavui, which means at one end of the Mavui it opens up into a bunch of Chatzeres. At the other end it opens up into Rishus HaRabim. Is Sido Echad Kol Liyam. If one end of this Mavui pours into the water, and we're talking about a depth of 10 tefachim, which gives it the status of mechitza, sido echad, so that's on one flank. On the other flank is kolli ashpa. You have an ashpa that's 10 tefachim high. So it seems that now you have mechitzas on both sides. And the question now is, can you allow carrying from the batim out into this mavui? Again, you're going to have to add a lechi, but based on the fact that on, right, when you leave your house, so the facade of your house, behind you is a mechitza. On the right side, you have the ashpa that's 10 tefachim high. On your left side, you have the bank of the ocean, which also has a height of 10 tefachim. So can he carry from the house out to the out into this mavui by being matirit with a lechi? But in any event, he has three bona fide mechitzas. His bar meisel ifnei Rebbe v'lo omer b'lo isav lo heter. Rebbe was hesitant. He was inhibited. He didn't want to say it's aser to carry. He didn't want to say it's mutter to carry. Heter lo omer. He didn't want to be matirit because chayshin shemati not del ashpa. We can never rely on ashpa. Ashpa is something that they clear away. So this mechitza, the ashpa, is not reliable. And yala yam sirton. In other words, there'll be all sorts of stuff that might come. This is another chashash, right? That might come, all sorts of different kinds of rubbish and seaweed and cement and whatever it might is that might sort of dry up, you know, be carried by the waves. And it might clog up this mechitza so that the surface level of the water and his mavui, the groundwork, is less than 10 tefachim, because he no longer has a mechitza on that side. But on the other hand, isalo amar bo, we didn't want to say it's also because our kaimim's mechitzas. If we look at the situation as it is now, there are mechitzas. There's the ashpa on one side, and he has the kololayam on the other side. So we see that Rebbe was very concerned about the possibility of that the ashpa would be taken away. Lo kasha ha de yachid ha de rabim. Rebbe was talking about a case of a private dumping ground. In other words, this rubbish was privately owned. And in the case of a privately owned rubbish, you very constantly, very often and frequently, you clear out the rubbish. But aval ha de rabim. But our Mishnah is talking about a case of a public dumping ground. And it's very, you know, very infrequent that they get together the garbage collectors to take away the ashpa. So we can rely on the ashpa. And this leads us to the Mishnah of Ilan, which is here on the bottom of Daf Tzadites Amid Beis, where in Emir Tzashem, we're going to pick that up tomorrow. So let me take this opportunity to wish you a wonderful day, and thank you so much.